Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello and welcome back to the Linux in the Ham Shack podcast, episode number 608. You're listening to the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet, and my name is Bill, NE4RD.
And I'm Cheryl, W5MOO, and Russ, K52X, is now a silent key, but he's still here with us.
Yes, he's still with us, and we will eventually figure out the intro.
Yeah, yeah. We're still working on that one. So
yeah, you know, it's one of those things. Anyway, the past two episodes, we've done a little bit of short topics work. Tonight, we're going to take an opportunity to deep dive into a topic, and that topic is Open Ham Clock. But before we do that, we're just going to kind of just go around the table here and just see what we've been doing, either amateur radio-wise or Linux-wise, over the past week. So, Cheryl, we'll start with you. What have you been doing with either ham radio, Linux, or maybe even hedonism? Anything fun hedonism out there?
Well, for dinner tonight, I fixed chicken enchilada soup, but that's it. And regarding that, I cleaned off some of the ham radio gear in Russ's office because it was covered in dust. So everything's been cleaned up in there. That was today. And then I got the email that I had missed that said, by the way, did you do your little, you know, challenge that I gave you, which was working on Open Ham Clock and getting it running on my computer. And I have battled that all day, along with sending Russ several messages and getting lots of Google is your friend back. Bill has now determined that Google was not my friend today.
So. Definitely sent you down a path of interesting stuff, which we're going to talk about too. Your system ended up just kind of in a weird state, and that's why you couldn't give an answer back that made sense to me.
Right.
But like sharing screens back and forth does help quite a bit, because then I could see exactly what you were doing, and I could see what and I could show you what I was doing. And strangely enough, we were both doing it on the same system, but neither one could see each other. So
yeah,
definitely get to that. Well, did you get a chance to turn a radio on?
I did not turn a radio on.
Okay. Well, next time you're in there, Dustin, bump the power button on that.
All right. I'll do it.
You can listen to the nice, lovely, dulcet tones of screeching FT8 or something. I think.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, on this end, I have been doing a little bit of FT8 work. I did notice on a few bands that I'm getting some RF in the shack, and it's probably because of my antenna orientation. I actually send the coax out to the far side of the house, and I bring the antenna wire back to this side of the house. So on some bands, like from 40 and 80 and stuff like that, weird things start happening in the shack, including, you know, my TV turns on right next to me for some reason. And yeah, I think there's some diminished transceiving capabilities there on the antenna on those bands. So there's definitely, we'll have to cut that out. Oh, wow. It will definitely be some reorientating my antenna here in the future. But I did manage to squeak out. God, let me log into Wavelog here real quick. I have done quite a bit of contacts this week. I'm thinking, let's see, this week. Oh, it only shows me today. Of course, I could probably look at my analytics, my stats by this month, which I haven't really done much in 2026, except for just recently, like this past week or so. And I have worked 303 stations on FT8.
Good grief. So,
yeah, they pile up quick. And I may have tested my GUI automation script, and may have left it in test mode for a while. So I could see how well that works. Works great. So anyway, I was here all the time, actually, but I didn't have to click the button very much. It was fine. It looked like a competent operator was on the system. Anyway, let's get to our topic here. We decided to take what we'd mentioned in the past couple episodes, one briefly and then one fully in the Linux and the Ham Shack segment last episode. There's this Open Ham Clock, which is over on GitHub, and we linked it in the show notes last time. It is now also going to be linked in this show notes. And we did kind of go over exactly what they said it was, so we're going to go ahead and say it again just for the context of this particular podcast, should you not listen to the other one. Open Ham Clock is a real-time amateur radio dashboard for the modern operator. Open Ham Clock brings DX cluster spots, space weather, propagation predictions, POTA activations, SOTA activations, WWFF, that's not like wrestling, right? Activations, WWBOTA activations, PSK reporter, satellite tracking, WSJTX integration, direct rig control, and more into a single browser-based interface. You run it locally on a Raspberry Pi, on your desktop, or access it from anywhere via cloud deployment. Their website is openhamclock.com, where they have a nice little viewable demonstration of the actual product itself. This is open source. It has an MIT license, and you can GitHub clone it down from our favorite GitHub site. Maybe they'll move to Codeberg soon, like Gen 2.
Like everybody else is.
Yeah, exactly. So they have a quick start guide here to getting installed. And in some cases, it's quick for you. Other cases, not so quick. Cheryl had some issues trying to get the NPM to work properly. So this is a JavaScript-based program. It needs an NPM to run, which is, of course, is your Node package manager. And it needs Node.js. So a good combination to get Node.js and NPM installed, if you do not have that, is using a product called NVM. It's called Node Virtual Machine, I always want to say. But I'm going to see real quick. NVM, what are you? NVM is a Node version manager. Of course, it's not virtual machine. a Node version manager. And this is very useful if you're doing development across many different products that need various versions, or they're locked into a certain version of Node. I mean, hopefully the products are all using the latest release, the LTS release, which in this case is version 24 for Node and version 11.9, I believe, for for our good friend NPM. But Cheryl, when she went to install NVM, you ended up with what version of NPM? Like 5.8 or something that?
I think it was 5.10. And then I had the 24.14 that was coming out.
Right, yeah, the right version of Node, but like, I don't even know how the version of NPM got there. Right. So Cheryl kind of went through with me over text back and forth, which you know how like non-full of information texting is back and forth. She did her best and I did my best. And you know, I'm kind of, you know, teaching Cheryl how to fish here. And I'm like, you know, cast the line in again. No, cast the line. No, okay, well, shake it a little bit to the left. Okay, cast it again. Okay, you don't have any bait on there. Put the bait back on the hook, you know. So we kind of go through all these permutations and I'm like, you're doing everything right and it's still just not working. You know, I even had to remove the .nvm directory, which strangely enough, when you executed that command, you were actually in that directory. So I'm surprised it didn't complain.
Yeah.
That's a follow-up. I did log into her machine and I installed NVM again and it installed fine and ran. So somehow, somewhere, it got messed up. And yeah, I have literally never seen that before. And it was really helpful having the visible, seeing the screen and stuff like that of what you were exactly seeing. Cause it was definitely a hard one to like kind of wrap my head around. It's like, I don't even see how, you know, installing the LTS version can even install the version of Node that was, or the NPM. That version was like from, I don't even remember, like Node.js 8 or something like that. So anyway, if you have a problem installing NVM like Cheryl did, you may have to go through some permutations to get it right. I do not recommend actually installing it from from your package repo if you're on some computers or some distributions, only because it won't have the LTS version, and I'd highly recommend you install the LTS. You can. I did it on my Ubuntu box, my Ubuntu Mint box. I installed Node.js from the Node.js website using their script, and it installed fine and installed Node NPM fine. As well, on my Fedora box here, I just used NVM and I installed it that way. So I've tried both ways on two different boxes. It worked somewhat flawlessly. So if you can get through that step, they have a couple of command lines you need to use with the NPM. One is NPM CI, and that sort of does all the setup stuff. But I noticed on mine, and this was on both boxes, that when I did that, it sort of ran it, but it only ran the NPM CI did the setup. So basically pulled all the packages it thought it needed. And then it has NPM start as the next command, which in theory should start everything up. But what it really is only doing is only starting the background service. So it's actually never going to get you to that web page. So the web page is never going to launch. It's never going to start the service for the web page. So you're never going to actually get to being able to click the localhost port 3000, which is what it eventually will expose, so you can see this nice, pretty desktop that it has. So once you figure out that you're missing a step, and I only figured this out because I was kind of like reading down their website, because after I ran it and I'm just sitting here watching it do its little updates, and it says, you know, updating so many satellites or whatever. So it was doing active polling and stuff like that. I should probably read what it's actually in here on the other screen. Yeah, so it's like cleanup. It removed so many expired spots. It's tracking so many DX stations. You'll kind of see this in the reverse beacon network as it's pulling stuff from the RBN. And you'll also see other stats and stuff like that, that it'll spit out. Like it's, you know, looking up call signs and there might be some missing stuff. Like it's trying to pull some data from a website that's not there. That can happen, or you can have a bad router. But their quick start guide is sort of saying that if you do the NPM start, you should be able to open up the website. I couldn't do that. I had to scroll down the page a little bit and look at, the bottom where it shows, or not the bottom, where it says, where it starts to talk about for development with hot reload. So this is on their main README page. That shows you should use two terminals, one for the back end, which runs node server.js, which is essentially what that npm start is doing. And then it says open a second terminal and run npm run dev. And what that does is actually launches the website. So once you have that going, you will then be able to navigate to that localhost port 3000. And you will see your fancy desktop thing here. Sorry. Your fancy open ham clock display. Now, at this point, you can set it up. You can either set it up here through settings, or you could have created a .env file. But before we get into that, out of that screen, I found another problem. So when it came up, it didn't have a map. So the center of the screen is supposed to show you a map. And Cheryl, you can probably follow along on the Open Ham Clock website, because it shows a map in the center, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So, and what I want to do is I want you to eventually, you're going to go over the UI elements that you see on the page there. But I want to go over the fact that the whole map was missing. So there was no map, there was no call signs or anything else being displayed, no map stuff at all. So I being a developer, opened up the console, and I noticed that it was missing a package, and it was the package that's important for drawing the map, and it's like a leaflet or something like that. So I killed everything and I started digging down, and I noticed there's a they mention in passing, like down further, I'm going to scroll down and find it. Let's see if I can find it here. The scripts. Yeah. So, So down lower, if you go all the way down to where you see deployment, This is where I found that, oh, there's some scripts for Linux to set up Linux. So I went into the OpenHamClock directory. I went into the scripts directory. I looked at the setup Linux shell script. And I noticed that, it pulls and gets some additional information, like some missing packages and stuff like that. There's also a vendor, pull vendor downloads as well, script in there, vendor-download.shell. So I had to do both of these things. I actually did the vendor download first, then I came back and I did the setup Linux, and then I relaunched everything using the npm start in one terminal and the npm run dev in the other terminal. Lo and behold, I had a map. So now I could finally say, I got it going. And so I was kind of excited for you, Cheryl, to get to this part and then have the frustration that I did that there was no darn map in the thing. And I was so hoping that, like, oh, if NVM would have installed fine, I think you would have got to here and you would probably got stuck at the one that it runs, the npm start, and it's not doing anything. And you're like, okay, right. So how does opening my web browser? I don't get anything. And then I don't know if you would have gone further and kept on reading down like I did. I kept on seeing, like, oh, what else is there? I've just got to be something else in this stupid thing, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not terrible at this, but anyway, there is. So that's a ways down the page too. That's past the configuration reference and everything else, and it actually repeats the installation before that is. Yeah. So the installation constructions could use some help. Once you get it going and running, it does look quite marvelous, and you can play around with the settings and everything else in it, including font sizes and whatnot. But Cheryl, why don't you give us some descriptions of the interface itself, and then why don't we go through the setup panel together, and we'll kind of go through this, see what kind of customizations you can do inside of the panel.
Alrighty then. Yeah, when I, obviously I'm looking at the website, the center, big center, you got your map and it covers the whole world. There's location information, target information, the solar standpoint right now, DX clusters, PSK reporting, expeditions, POTAs, contests. So it looks really nice. You can enter your call sign and your location in the settings. It's got local clock, UTC clock, temperatures, so it's great. But
have you set your call sign? And
I have not. I started to do that a second ago. So
some cool information. Once you set your call sign and your location, which we'll get into in the settings here in a second, you can click around the map and just drop your cursor, your clicker somewhere. And you'll notice it does have a VOA cap. And does it show the VOA cap on yours on the bottom left-hand side?
Yeah.
Okay. So as you click and move around the map, it does a VOA cap for that location to your location. And it shows you the probability throughout the bands from 80 through 10, which is kind of a cool little glance. You can see kind of how well the certain bands are operating within respect to your location to the DX location, which is a pretty useful information to have. The stuff that you see on the screen, like if you see call signs, do you see call signs and stuff like that all over the place?
Yes.
Okay, good. Those are all from like the PSK reporter and the reverse beacon network. I'm pretty sure they come from PSK reporter as well. Let me see if I can click one of these. I'm not able to click one.
Yeah, it won't let me do it either.
Yeah, I thought I could click four. Oh, there it is. Oh, no. Anyway, one of the other locations, I know I saw a pull request to limit the amount of polling it's doing to the RBN. I think it's probably a bit aggressive as well. Since you do self-host this thing on your own desktop or inside of an Electron app, if you compile it together and stuff like that, you are making all the calls. So there's no away back end. So there's no like server like we were talking about before with the ham clock back end replacement that people have been working on. This is completely standalone. This is completely self-hostable. You put it in a Docker container and have it on your network. You can install it. You can run it just from, you know, in dev mode here without really installing it at all, just right out of the directory. So, you are making all the polls for every piece of information that you see on the screen, including like that when Cheryl mentioned the solar stuff, you're getting the solar images for the various camera pulls. So you got the corona, the chromosphere, the quiet corona, the flaring and the visible for the NASA plot that's from NASA, the images from NASA. You get a DX cluster pull, so you're actually seeing DX cluster information, and that looks like those are some of the lines that you're seeing on the screen, because if I hover over them, it highlights the line. That's kind of cool. It shows PSK Reporter here. You could also hook up your WSJTX to this so it can see stuff from your WSJX feed. It has a UDP listener that it runs. You can see that running when you run the npm start for your little back end. One of the items is starting, WSJT-X UDP listener starting on, 0.0.0.0:2237. So you can hook up your own to this and it'll listen for your own spots. So it'll plot those on the map as well. It has de-expeditions on here, as Cheryl said, POTA activations, and then it has a bunch of tabs. So you can see all those other things that we had mentioned before, the, WWFF, the SOTA and stuff like that. It's a quite attractive display. And then it has a contest thing going on too down here. So you can see the active contests, or the upcoming contest, like it shows right now, the ICWC medium speed test starts in 11 hours. So get on that. Up at the top, it also shows you your current weather. Current temperature at my house is 17 degrees Fahrenheit. Woo-hoo, it's warming up. It shows you the SFI numbers, your K index, your A index, your SSN numbers. So lots of stuff there. So Cheryl, why don't you walk us through the settings screen?
I need that. Excuse me. So on the station settings screen, the first tab you've got is for your station to set up your call sign, your grid square, mouse wheel sensitivity, time zone, propagation mode and power, et cetera. Actually what language you speak. So that's kind of nice. The next thing.
Hey, you passed over a good one there. There's a beta thing in there. Do you see it in yours? You might not see it in that one. Do you see the rig control beta? No. So, there's.
Sorry?
No, because I'm running the main branch. So, yeah, that's right, the difference. Right. It has an option to enable rig control, and you can point it at your rig control D endpoint. So the host name and the port number. So it wants to connect to that net version. It doesn't actually run it itself. It connects via that. So you can actually get integration in with your radio, which I did not set up in mine because I'm actually running it on my podcast computer, not my ham radio computer. But I just wanted to add that in there since that's kind of like a cooler new feature that is not visible on the openhamclock.com demo site. So let's go ahead and go to the next tab.
Okay, the next tab is integrations, and it says these features require a local ham clock instance, so local only. There's a rotator, DX weather, and N3 FJP logged QSOs for that tab. The next tab is your display, so you can have modern, classic, tablet, whatever, dark, light, legacy, retro, custom, whatever. Then you have your map layers. And you have DE and DX markers, DX news ticker, city lights, provided apparently through NASA, city lights visualization. And there's propagation stuff with the DE, DX great circle, vocap propagation maps, amateur radio, QSO contest stuff, lightning activity, weather radar, aurora forecast, floods and storms, tornado warnings, wildfires, and earthquakes. So,
do you see a whisper on yours too? Up in
propagation? Yeah, I see whisper there. Yeah, I see.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it does have an MUF map and whisper. I didn't hear those mentioned, but the MUF, of course, is minimum usable frequency or maximum usable frequency. And a whisper, of course, is the slow low powered stations that creak and crawl, but give you propagation information and stuff like that across various areas. So that's kind of cool. And contest QSOs, what does that show? Oh, so from your contest loggers, your N1MM and DX log, apparently it can read those. So probably can pick up, I bet you can probably pick up not 1MM logger as well, because it's probably using the contest messaging thing that I believe not 1MM has built in. So it kind of enables the ability for stuff to hear it, like including N1M to hear not 1MM. So that's kind of a really cool feature to have. Keep going.
The next tab is the satellite tabs. There's 18 different ones mentioned here, like the ISS, Green Cube, blah, 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 blah. So those are all there, and you can pick and choose which ones you want to see and which ones you don't want to see. There's a tab to select all of them. So, and you can have track lines and footprints for your satellites and stuff. So then there's the profile.
Select them all, looks like.
Yeah. There's the profiles tabs. So you can save current state as a profile, QRZ.com call sign lookup. And as I was kind of like hovering over people on the map, I would say you can see, W5MO's, information on QRZ when,
Right. Yeah. I really like the idea of the profile. Cause you can set this up in multitude of ways. And if you're maybe just doing satellite work, you don't need to display, DX cluster spots and stuff like that. So you can trim stuff down and save it. Like, I'm just doing satellites today and I just need my rotator control and my rig control and satellites. And you can save that as your satellite profile. Or if you're doing contests, maybe you only want, stuff that's coming out of the cluster, or maybe only want stuff that's coming from your WSJTX. So kind of like the call roster in Grid Tracker. So you can have a Grid Tracker set up or something like that. That's pretty powerful. I kind of like that idea of having the ability to save out custom profiles for this kind of display.
Yep. There's also the ability to import and export files.
Oh, so you can export your config and save your config and bring it out. So you could customize like the website one or whatever if you're having fun with it and export it then, right?
Right, yeah. So, and then the last tab there is the community tab, and it has link to GitHub, Facebook, and Reddit. So you're all set, and it mentions, the contributors and stuff, so, and the creator. So that's all kind of cool.
Yeah. So this is it's pretty full featured. There's a lot of things that you can get into here with the configuration. There's a lot of bells and whistles to turn on and off. Like this community support thing has on it, it has the GitHub for tracking your issues or anything else like that. Or if you're looking for new software or releases, you'll go to the GitHub page. And then the two different discussion groups too for checking in on updates. Let me cancel out of this thing. This is pretty slick. And I was just looking at the satellite display, and I love the display of the footprints and everything else. And I could see, when I create footprints to see, I can see I've highlighted the three satellites. It's given me how far downrange it is, the current azimuth and elevation of my antenna. Should I want to contact something through the ground? Because obviously I can't see it. AO7, I can actually see it. It says it's visible right now. The other ones say they're below horizon. The other one's below horizon. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see, like, how much further this thing can go with, like, especially with rig control. I wonder if it actually will change the frequency and stuff like that for, you know, kind of like G-Predict does when you have it hooked up to a rig. It'll switch frequencies when the satellite gets into acquisition of signal and stuff like that. So, yeah, it looks pretty powerful to me, and it's very colorful. What do you think of the color, Cheryl? Is it too much?
I love it.
Very busy.
No, I've been sitting here flipping through, because on the map screen you can switch through the satellite or the terrain or street or ocean or whatever view of the map. So yeah. I've been going between dark and satellite, and yeah, so I've just been having fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun little thing to play with. Let me get back to the notes here. So setup. Okay, so installation instructions. It needs some work. Definitely needs some work with installation instructions.
Yes.
There's some gotchas there. Even on a system, like on the two systems I have here, I had the same problem, and I followed the same instructions, and they weren't complete, at least for me to get it working. And then if you have an issue like NVM, like Cheryl did, yeah, who knows how long that's going to go. Yeah. luckily we were able to figure it out. So the setup, I mean, once I get through the gotchas of the installation, I think the setup is pretty easy. You're literally just putting in your call sign and your grid square for minimum setup. There should be nothing else you really need to do to get it going. It automatically pulls everything in. So that's pretty minimal. You can do it either with a .env file as suggested, or you can do it right through the interface and have it save the configuration out. So the setup's pretty minimal. If you get into using the rig control or some of the other newer features, you know, your mileage may vary at this point, especially if it says like beta on it still. Let's see the features. We kind of went through that in the display. I'm sure we didn't touch on all of them. There's an extensive list of features, and it's probably changing at a pretty good rate at this point. But you can go to their GitHub page, look at the master README, and it does go over literally everything that they have in the repo. They are keeping that up to date. Let's just look at the README file. Readme was just updated last week. So it is getting updated along with the code. So hopefully as things get added, that gets updated. Hopefully we can get some little cleaner setup installation instructions and stuff like that, so people can play with this and maybe not run into those gotchas that we ran into here. So let's see, many thoughts. I think we both shared some thoughts on it. It looks kind of cool. It is kind of neat to kind of dig around. I find this more enticing for me to kind of play with than I've ever felt with Grid Tracker or something like that. I always thought Grid Tracker was cute and it was kind of neat. I never really got the value of using it. Russ used it all the time. But this is a kind of a cool little map thing. I actually might keep and run. I don't know. I have it on four boxes now, so maybe. Maybe, just maybe, I'll keep it. And I think, unless you have any other thoughts on this topic, Cheryl, I think we're going to leave Open Ham Clock right where it's at.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Cool. So I did find a related topic. I know Peter, the guy who wrote CloudLog, is kind of working on his own product. And he has it up on the web. It's sort of in its infancy. It's called DX Chrono. I have linked it here in the show notes. And it's what he has here is pretty minimal. The screenshots he's been showing on Twitter or X or whatever it's called are more intriguing. So I'm kind of excited to see where that product is going. And I'm not sure if that's actually going to be something that's like open source or released that way. And I believe he's going to have it be a web-based thing. So it might not necessarily have rig integration, but I mean, CloudLog has rig integration. So I'm sure it wouldn't be too much of a push to have cloud or rig control and everything else working DX Chrono as it gets developed. So take a look at that. Follow Peter over there on the Weapon X, Mike 9 Sierra Quebec Lima. And that brings us down to announcements and feedback. Cheryl?
Alrighty then. So, you know, obviously we need support for the show. You can do that through Patreon, PayPal, you can buy merch, you can share us, whatever you want to do. Just spread the word about us. So, and we will be at Hamvention, which is May 15th through the 17th. We will be at booth 2206. And of course, that's at the Greene County Fairgrounds in Xenia, Ohio. So, which is a little suburb of Dayton, I guess. It's kind of more than a suburb, but
yeah,
it's
own little township. Whatever.
it's our own little town. Yeah, but it's over there, kind of by Dayton. So yeah, stop by, see us. Yeah, you probably can't miss us. Yeah, so because we're in the big buildings now. So
yeah,
where there's gale force winds that roll through there, which I'm not complaining about. At least there's a breeze. So and other than that, we had a free Patreon sign up this week, which is Meyer Door. And other than that, we had Don with KB2YSI. He joined us tonight on the live show. So that's it.
Our sole person listening to us live. Everybody must have been busy today. So thanks for joining us, Don. He did say I should set this up. I think my 3B is running behind me. My 3B. I don't know what that is, Don.
He'll explain in a second, I'm sure.
We'll definitely wait for this. Oh, Raspberry Pi.
Raspberry Pi, yeah.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, I have this all on desktops right now. Actually, I did have it on a lower powered little micro computer, but I think it has maybe a smidge more power than like a Raspberry Pi 4. And it did run fine there, including in developer mode. But anyway, so that brings us down to the end of the show. I'd like to thank you all for listening to this episode. And we're continuing to, try to get to a little bit tighter on stuff and work out the topics as best we can. If you have a suggestion for a topic like this or like something else, please send it to us in feedback. Our email is info@lhspodcast.info. You can send me a message directly here in the Discord. A lot of people take advantage of doing that via the direct messages if they're afraid to talk in the main chat rooms and stuff like that. It's fine to could go ahead and use that direct message feature. I did get an email. Let me see if there was any. I'll push the email to next week, because I have to figure out a better answer than what I'd sent in my response in the email response. Let me stew on it a little bit. but anyway, we thank you for listening to this episode number 608 of Linux in the Ham Shack, a deep dive on Open Ham Clock. Until next time, this is Bill, NE4RD.
And I'm Cheryl, W5MOO73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.